This series is brought to you with the kind support of Wellington Management, one of the world's largest independent asset managers. Wellington believes in the importance of a diverse workforce, equitable opportunities for all colleagues to reach their potential, and an inclusive culture.
What I would say is, though, you come out all the time. Every new person you meet, every holiday you book, any new school you go to, anything that's new at all, you're coming out all the time. It's a constant thing. It never stops. Now, as I say, it's helpful if you look like me because it kind of gets out of the way for the observant reasonably early on. But it is a constant process. And I think that's one of the things that people who identify in my community, in the LGBT plus community, feel is it's never ending.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2022. I'm joined today by Robin Grew, who is Group COO and General Counsel, as well as Global Head of Legal and Compliance at Man Group. Previously, she worked in a number of different compliance roles of financial services firms. She lives with her wife in the New York City area and has a college-aged son. Welcome, Robin. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start by talking about your background. Where did you grow up and what were your early interests?
So I grew up in Essex, but with very, very strong links to London, where both my grandmothers lived. I'm an only child of only children. So the grandmothers were really important to maintaining the sanity, I think, of everybody involved in this particular relationship. Early interests, everything except authority. So loved my friends, loved sport, loved parties, loved joining most civil rights groups. And I marched for minors. I marched against runways. I marched with amnesty. I marched for equal rights. I think from an early age, I was just very interested in equality for everyone.
But isn't that one of life's beautiful ironies that you're now in a compliance role?
No.
But
you have no idea.
Well, let's go from there, from that radical youth phase to how you ended up in financial services. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, for sure. Listen, I qualified as a barrister and I was at the common law bar and I made a move into financial services because I didn't know what it was, but I was interested in knowing what this commercial lark was about so that I could ultimately return to the bar and become a commercial barrister. That was the only career plan I think I've ever had in my life. And as you can tell, it didn't work out that way. Why was that? I guess financial services has just provided me with just too many opportunities to learn, to travel, to be part of complex issues, to be part of a changing day that you can never really anticipate. In my COO role, I'm responsible for legal, for compliance, for business operational risk, for cybercrime, for financial crime, for HR, for talent, for ops, for a whole bunch of things. And now I'm also responsible as the head of ESG for the firm, which means I cover the corporate social responsibility for Man Group as an issuer. And I'm responsible for the responsible investing strategy, so for all of our engines, for the firm as well. So my role just keeps on changing and evolving. As you rightly say, I live in New York now. So I'm speaking with this accent from a completely different part of our global network. Those are opportunities that have just been too good to give up to go back to the bar.
Really interesting. As your role has expanded, there's no playbook or kind of instruction manual for what a COO does. So how have you kind of embraced the areas where you've had to come up the learning curve?
Kind of with enthusiasm, perhaps too much enthusiasm for some of my colleagues, I think, from time to time. It's a fantastic space where if you are curious, as I am, and you are interested in just learning new, the role of a COO where I have this vast sort of complex group of experts working with me and tackling problems has just been a phenomenal experience. I enjoy not being the smartest person in the room. I enjoy learning every single day. I enjoy tackling problems. And so for somebody who's curious and likes fixing things, which is really what I am, the role has been nothing but brilliant for that. And it has meant that I've traveled the world. I've lived in Japan. I'm now living in New York again, working in a global network where you have to navigate cultures and languages and different rules and different laws and different customs and different requirements adds to my mind, the complexity that I think is enjoyable. So for me, I throw myself in, quite frankly, to pretty much everything I've been asked to do. And I've had the benefit of working with people who are just top draw at what they do every single day. So I get to learn every day. They get to have to deal with my enthusiasm for learning every day.
Well, just my last question on the job front is just, it seems like you always embrace change and nuance.
Yeah.
And a compliance role, one of the real challenges is how to infuse it with commercialism and ever-changing backdrops.
Yeah.
How do you approach the compliance role in that respect?
I think maybe this is some background of my lawyering, or maybe it's just who I am, but I think the compliance department, any support and control department, risk, compliance, whatever it may be, is there to help navigate a firm through what is normally a minefield of complex rules, regulations, and requirements, some of which don't make sense, some of which directly conflict with other rules and requirements from other jurisdictions. So you have to understand your business to understand the impact of those rules and regs. You have to understand how you're trying to create an offering for your clients in the context of the regulatory framework or the legal framework of each and every country. Not to know that is not good for your clients either. So I think they go hand in hand. Yes, they have to have an arm's length view, but actually those departments are there to navigate complexities that exist and that your clients are facing as well as your firm are facing. So I think that has been some of the joy of it. When you are attached to an infrastructure area or a support and control area, you have the benefit of knowing the firm front to back. You cover all of your business areas. You cover all of your operations areas. That is a brilliant view of how an organization is structured and works effectively. So they're a tremendous opportunity for getting to understand an organization through that lens. And that's why plenty of people from legal, compliance, ops, risk move into the front office. And I said that within sort of inverted commas above it, because they add so much value to those functions as well.
Absolutely. And there is, of course, a joy in reducing the complex to the digestible. Another topic now moving, because this is the Pride series, and we're celebrating the career journeys of LGBTQ plus professionals. So I'd love to hear about your own experience. And sometimes we think of this as being a simple area or a complex area, the whole element of creating better inclusion. Can you talk us through your own journey in coming out and your professional experience?
Sure. I guess I was never really not out in many ways. The benefit of a podcast is you don't see me, but if you look at me, I leave less to the imagination about whether I'm straight or whether I'm gay. So that has helped me in this journey. But I suppose most people talk about when they come out to their parents. When I finally had a conversation with my parents, it was to introduce them to my then girlfriend, who is my now wife, as we were moving in together. And to say they were far from shocked doesn't really get to the point. So in many ways, I've had a life which from my earliest years, 17, 16, 17 years on, where I kind of was who I was, and I took my fair share of verbal or threatening abuse on that journey since my teens, really. What I would say is, though, you come out all the time. Every new person you meet, every holiday you book, any new school you go to, anything that's new at all, you're coming out all the time. It's a constant thing. It never stops. Now, as I say, it's helpful if you look like me because it kind of gets out of the way for the observant reasonably early on. But it is a constant process. And I think that's one of the things that people who identify in my community, in the LGBT plus community, feel is it's never ending. So, as I say, I think I do pretty well, but my wife, who is not so obvious, can get quite frustrated that she spends half of her time saying, no, my wife, no, not my husband, no, my wife. And I think that that's the additional bit of the conversation that perhaps people don't talk about. And by the way, it doesn't stop for us. It also continues for our son, right? So you mentioned we have a college A son. Indeed, we do. We have a straight white frat boy son who, when asked in his freshman year, which he's in right now at a US university, what do your parents do? What does your mum do? What does your dad do? He's constantly coming out for us too. So it's an ongoing thing for all of us.
And it's interesting because you're in New York City, so a liberal bastion, you might think. Similarly, London might be more liberal. Sydney would be liberal. Do you find when you live in an area where that might be more commonplace that you're coming out a little bit less often?
Yes. And I think that's why there is a concentration of people who identify in LGBT plus spaces in cities and in environments where it's easier. I have to say, I own a house in Cornwall where it's less common. And it is a different experience. There is definitely freedom through walking through New York City, or a freedom if you're in, let's say, San Francisco or in LA or in London or potentially in Manchester or those places. It definitely makes your life easier to be in a part of the world where you are protected, where your rights are protected, where the laws are there to protect you. It is much, much harder, and it will stop. There will be business venues or meetings in certain parts of the world that would not be very welcoming of me, potentially sometimes because you're a woman, but certainly if you're gay. This is the point which is on our shoulders, is the fact that the world doesn't view our life or protect our lives in the way that New York does everywhere. So there are holiday places I will not go because, obviously, I'll spell it out, because the homosexuality is either criminalized or at least illegal. And I don't fancy giving up my freedom or indeed my life. So I think that's the piece of the puzzle. So you are going to find the LGBT plus folk are going to want to be in places where they don't have that pressure. But it's why we continue to fight for equality across the world.
And of course, one place you should never feel that pressure or should never feel unsafe is in the workplace. So can you talk about for you how, well, maybe over the course of your career, the representation of gay professionals has changed and maybe how the environment of inclusion has changed as well?
There has been remarkable change, certainly in the firms I work with and for. But I'd like to think there's some correlation in there, but I think that's just how life has moved on. You know, at the beginning of my career, which is about 1,000 years ago, it feels like now, there wasn't representation. And you felt, one, invisible, but also you have to remember that people who are part of the community, identify as part of this community, if they're not out, are in fear. They're in fear of being outed. They're in fear that this is somehow going to impact their careers in some curtailment or indeed in having a job at all. So it is extraordinary to look at what we have lived through. Before, when I was in America, my son was born here. So this is 18, 19 years ago now. My wife couldn't be here under my green card. We didn't have legal marriage or civil rights at that point as a civil union. We came back to the UK for our civil union. That was not recognized in the US. And ultimately, that's one of the reasons why we left the US, because she was a non-person here. In our lifetimes, we've had civil partnership. We now have marriage in certain countries. And today, she's here on my green card as my wife. That is an extraordinary set of circumstances to live through. And that is represented in our workplaces. It was nothing but a brilliant statement. We had a meeting with our Pride Network. And one of the queries and problems we had, this is about 4 or 5 years ago now, was a lack of visibility of people who identify in the LGBT plus community. When they join the firm, how do they know who their allies and their friends are? And so we came up with a tremendously expensive idea. It cost nothing, really nothing, where we bought little flags that you could stick on your computer or in a little stand that were the Pride flags. And we ordered 30. And we said, anybody who wants to have a Pride flag, please let us know. And you can just put it on your desk. And if you don't want to have one, it's fine. And we ordered another 30 more. And then we had to order another 30. And we ordered some ally flags. People wanted an ally flag and a Pride flag. And there are now kind of hundreds of these flags all over our offices globally. And they sit there on people's desks, and they're part of their conference calls, and they're part of their video calls, and they're part of when people walk around the office or the new joiners seeing literally with a flag, what is this firm about? It was a very cheap solution to providing visibility and allyship in our organization. It was way more effective than I thought it was going to be. And when we then did some fleeces, as sometimes you do around holiday times, we had a limited number of fleeces with a rainbow M, the M being the man group sign. I had official complaints about why there weren't enough and why couldn't they have some. That visibility, that allyship is superb. So that's what's been hugely valuable.
It's amazing how simple something like that is, and what a simple gesture like that can do. We spoke before about lesbian visibility. There's the fact that there's a lesbian visibility week. Why is it that you think it is harder for women to be out in the workplace than men, or is it in your experience?
Do you know, it's such an interesting question. I think the challenges are different. I think women in the workplace generally already feel underrepresented in senior roles. They're already, you know, as women, fighting the aggressive versus assertive battle. You know, we can talk about how language is used. If you then add in the complexity of being gay, it becomes even more challenging, I think. So I think visibility for the lesbian community is tough. I think that women already are feeling the pressure of not being in the senior roles and not finding the right language and not finding the right sponsorship in organizations. So despite there being, I think, a broader community social piece where women are less threatening, laws tend to be, for example, codified against men, against male homosexuality rather than lesbianism, there is still sort of the pecking order in society of where do women actually sit. So if you're somebody who feels that your gender and the way you identify, your cisgender or your gender, it already puts you at a disadvantage, if you layer onto that another disadvantage, as it may be perceived, or another space where you have to explain yourself some more, it doesn't surprise me that visibility becomes an issue. And the lesbian community can, as the gay community can, pass. Identifying in this community doesn't mean that you have to be out. You can be in society and you don't have to put it out there. So I think visibility is an issue. I think the challenges are different. I think they're definitely layered. And I think we have a lack of female representation in senior roles across the city and across the world, which is part of the problem here.
So interesting, that kind of double minority status, I suppose, which does add to the complexity. Just going back now to some personal reflections, were there any key people throughout your career, either who were mentors to you, role models for you, or influenced you otherwise?
Yes. I mean, I would certainly not be in the place I'm in today from a professional perspective without any number of people who sponsored me, mentored me, and supported me. I mean, like all of me, like 100% me, who got the fact that I was a bit different and perhaps that I enjoy being a bit different, which is the truth of it. I think I do. I kind of embrace the fact that I look at life through a different set of lenses. Is part of that due to my sexual orientation? Perhaps it is. And is it certainly viewed different because I look through life from a different set of lenses and from different perspectives? Absolutely. And those people kind of got a hold of Robin and said, right, we'll point you at this problem we have over there. You seem to like fixing things and difference, and you come up with different ideas to help us do that. And throughout my career in investment banking or throughout my career at Man Group, I have had that. But I would not have had that if I hadn't been me, if I had tried to pass as something that wasn't me. And I think that's the difficulty for anybody in this space, is the being authentically you means that you are 100% the best version of you. If you are trying to be something else, you are always going to be an imitation of it because it isn't you. So I was lucky. I was tremendously lucky. I've also had the support of my family. I've had the support of my wife. And we have been together for a very long time. We've been together for, what is it, nearly 29 years or something like that. And we've gone on this journey together. So I don't think I'd be here but for that support. Nevertheless, I think you have to be brave. You have to be you in order to gain that support. There's something very important about that vulnerability and that authenticity.
Well, Robin, you're such a positive person. It's hard to imagine you have had many setbacks or challenges, but I'm sure there have been some in the course of it. How have you dealt with them? And what kind of mindset have you brought to coping?
You're right. On the whole, I think I am pretty positive as a person. So I have tended to be intolerant of something that I don't understand, which is somebody's prejudice about me or the community in which I identify as somehow being a threat to somebody or themselves when it's just clearly not. So I tend to meet that a little bit head on, if we're honest, Ethan. I'm not very good at this going backwards piece or somehow apologizing for something that is not to be apologized for. So how do I face things? I face things with a degree of humor, hopefully. I face things by, they used to be 20, 30 years ago, you know, you turn up for work and you're out, you're making a radical statement. That's what it used to be like. When we had our son, when we had Alec, that was a different thing. People didn't do that. That was not quite as common as it is today. and every step forward, you are going to challenge people. You're breaking new ground. And every moment you do something that's different on you, having a child, getting married, those sorts of things, they bring about people's reactions because they're not used to it. That isn't what they understand. And so I think I face those things head on. I go through the front door, I think people have said in the past. So I'm what I am. I'll talk to anybody who wants to talk to me. If you have a problem and it's purely based on prejudice, then I don't accept that prejudice. I don't take on that negativity. I don't take on your issues. And I move forward. But there have been definite times where, especially when I was a lot younger, people have been abusive and they've been physically threatening. And you have to walk a little bit away from some of those places because I'm 5'1" and I'm unlikely to win.
It reminds me of the expression, what other people's opinion of me is none of my business. But of course, it becomes your business when it can be hurtful or it can hurt people you love. So I totally understand that. But going through the front door, I think, is a wonderful way to think about approaching life. My last question is around any maybe advice you would have for your younger self or any creed or motto that you live by now. Is there anything you can share there?
Advice for my younger self. I mean, it's a difficult one. I think when you are older, you realize that you can get through anything and that it is going to get better and that you can make a huge impact on people and the places that you work or the people you connect with. And don't be frightened of it. Just don't. Any pause for thought on that, just don't have it. Just go with it. Because I hate quoting L'Oreal because that feels like the wrong answer to this question, but you are worth it, right? This is the point. You are as valuable, you are valid, you are real, you are important, and you can make a difference. And your difference makes the world a better place.
Well, I can't think of a better place to end this conversation, Robin. Your zest for life, your interest in learning, and change, and progress is just completely infectious. And thank you for coming here and for sharing your insights with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to our 50 Faces Focus series. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring professionals and their stories, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest. 'Cause I was made to be free.